There's a thousand further women living out there. They're all living the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas!
Thank you, Wayne Newton. You are listening to Cats with the Dish, presented by the Las Vegas Sun. This is John Katsalamidis. I write the Cats Report on LasVegasSun.com, LasVegasWeekly.com, and in the Las Vegas Sun print edition 8 days a week. And on the phone, we have Tricia McCrone. Trish, how are you doing, honey?
I'm good. You never call me Tricia. That was weird.
I know. It's, you know why? It's the unfamiliarity now. I haven't seen you in about 2 weeks.
Okay, if you throw out Patricia, like my legal name,
Patricia McCrone of Las Vegas. I'll leave your age out of it, though.
My gosh, I'm running for governor of Montana, and all of a sudden, like, I'm not dishy anymore.
you leapt right over the municipalities there, and you're in Montana still. We should let everybody know. And
yes,
not and running for
you've
mayor.
You've been calling me mayor, but I think that now at this point, it's been about other than coming back to do some shows, obviously. I have pretty much been here about 7 weeks.
Mayor or mayor is the question. I miss you. We miss having you here. It's really the energy of the city is not the same when you're in the Kalispell Flathead
so
Lake
sweet.
Region. So you got to get back. You're going to come back this weekend, correct?
Yes, I am. I this will be the last time that I will be a phoner. Absolutely. It was. I will be back. I'm coming back in a couple days, which I love Vegas and I love, you know, obviously being there in the studio, but I have to say, it's like, as you know, this place is good for the soul and I'm very serene here and very like, it's kind of like a no drama zone.
Well, yeah, I think if you stay there long enough, it'll become dramatic though.
Yeah,
if you're there for another couple weeks.
Yeah. But I'm kind of worried about that on the way home, I'm going to have to stop in Betty Ford and a Fat Farm because all I've done is eat and drink for 7 weeks. Better get that wide-angled lens, Vegas TV.
Gotta drop in on Betty. Well, we should. Yeah, you made reference to it. Since you've been gone, the show has gone to television.
I know. We now have to, like, be careful, like, what gestures and that we give each other when we thought it was just radio.
Yeah, that's right. You can't give me the universal one-digit salute that you do
exactly.
So often on radio. But we are on KTUD, Channel 14, on Cox Cable and Channel 25 over the air. Vegas TV, and it's where you find quite a lot of shows like Family Guy and The Office,
Frasier,
exactly. And we've been doing it for a couple of weeks, and we're on at 4 p.m. On Sundays. So
yes.
We're on TV now, Dishy.
I know. Isn't that cool?
I know. It's really interesting. It's really interesting to know that and be in town. So a lot of people have already responded to it as I've made my way around the city in your absence.
I know. Well, see, I just find out from like Facebook or people have texted me or left me voicemails. Like, and the first, you know, when you're here in Montana, you lose track of time completely.
Mm-hmm.
Like time does not exist. And so, you know, I got a message from somebody that said, "Oh my gosh, I saw you on tonight on Vegas TV, and you know, get out from behind. You keep getting the microphone blocked." Like, so I'm like, okay, people are already giving me like advice.
I got that this week at the which show was it? It was Santa Fe and no, it was Frankie Moreno. I went and saw Tuesday night, and I was walking through the lounge at the Palms, and somebody came up and said that very same thing about you, that you need to move your face away from the microphone. And I said, yeah, you had this beautiful woman who's on this show, and then we hide her behind this big black mesh thing. I said, that's the way we roll at Cats with the Dish. I'm like, I'm going to have to switch places with her or something. But it's a work in progress, and the shows we've had Chris on and Jeff Timmons.
It's a little crazy because of the fact with, you know, obviously we still are doing a radio show. So, you know, there is equipment that needs to be there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So,
we have multiple cameras involved and lights, and it gets warm in here. And the people who come in, for example, our guest on this episode, one of them, Lon Bronson, I had neglected, or we had a miscommunication about the fact that there would be video cameras in the room. So he shows up and, like, I forget, what was he wearing, a Who t-shirt?
He was like,
and
thanks for the
heads up. Yeah, he's like, so our guest is already miffed when they walk in the room. Usually our guests are miffed when they leave, but yeah, he was miffed on his way in. But
that was your phone call, by the way, not mine.
Yeah, by we I mean me.
Yeah.
Well, you want to back up how we had to have Lon on the show in the first place? We were lucky we got him in here at all. Lon came in on a short notice, long story short. So I was glad that he could have showed up in a bathrobe and it would have been fine.
Exactly. And by the way, what a great guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Lon Bronson is as respected a musician in Las Vegas as we have, yeah, and a super, super engaging guy. And he's as we will learn since we've recorded that already, he has a deep history and a deep affection for the city and the performers who've made their mark here. So we knew he was going to be on the show eventually anyway.
Yeah, so yeah, and I think I teased it a couple weeks ago because we had actually already recorded it on my 2-day.
As you say, in Montana, time stands still, right?
I know, my 2-day marathon that I did when we came back and did interviews before I got right back on a plane to Montana. But also, and then this is going to mark the first time, this show is going to mark the first time that there is an interview without me.
Well, you know, in pre-Cats with a Dish, I did all the interviews by myself.
There is no pre-Cats with a Dish cast. When are we going to get that?
Back in the Mesozoic era.
Long gone.
Back when there's an archaeological dig for the evidence of this show before you were involved, but there is evidence of it there. It was called it was Our Metropolis, and I used to do 30-minute interviews without you, and boy, was that a crashing bore. But yeah, we have
that was BD before Dish.
BD. BDY. It's Mark O'Toole I've conducted that interview with him, and he's a super guy, and we've got to, when you get back, we need to go see him over at M Resort. Great story to tell, and there's so much to catch up on when you get back. We've got just a number of anniversaries coming up. We've got the city has continued to move forward, I'll tell you that.
It didn't stand still in my absence.
Not exactly.
No, but it's going to be good. I think it's going to be a little bit of culture shock, like having to put on makeup, wash my hair as much and all that kind of stuff. Like I've been very much like just like relaxed, having a good time.
Well, what have you been? I mean, when I was up there visiting, there was a lot of action. It was karaoke night at
Spinnaker. It was at the Docks, which is an outdoor place this last weekend, which was a lot of fun. But most importantly, I have to give a shout out, we surprised my mom for her birthday. We had a surprise party here the other night.
Right.
Which was so lovely, so much fun. She was completely surprised, and a bunch of friends came in from out of town. So it was a really special night. And thank you, by the way, for the wonderful phone call that you gave to my mom, Kat.
Sang to her.
That meant a lot.
I sang to her.
Yeah.
And I was afraid.
It was great.
I was afraid that somehow I would do something to blow the surprise. I was just like, what would I possibly do to blow this thing? Because I've been in a stretch where I've been just blowing stuff lately. And I was like, I can call and wish her a happy birthday at some point and not blow this, right?
Yes, you can.
But she's awesome, and she's due to come back from Montana too. Isn't the whole clan going to come back eventually?
I know.
Las Vegas again?
Crazy? Well, everyone else goes other places, but I'm coming back.
Well,
so.
We do have let's see, what have I been doing lately? I did go to see Frankie Moreno at the new show at the
Lounge. And I saw a picture of you with Gordy Brown.
And Gordy was, Gordy was there too. He's been at for all of Frankie's shows. And I've been doing the Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns thing. Brody, another one of our guests, is doing his one-man show on Saturday night. And there's just a lot happening. So
he is coming this Saturday or last Saturday?
This Saturday. Tomorrow night, Brody will be doing a one-man show over at Ovation.
He's doing Brody's World?
Yep. And so that's going on. And it's tonight. It's tonight. Sorry, Friday. But we have a lot to catch up on. And I do need to announce our guests or remind people.
Oh, is Pat's over already? I don't keep track of things in Montana, obviously.
Well, time moves a little bit more quickly here in Vegasville. Joining us on this edition of the show is the aforementioned Lon Bronson of the Lon Bronson All-Star Band. They kick it up on Thursdays at Ovation at Green Valley Ranch. And Mark O'Toole, who has survived non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and is back on stage headlining at M Resort. A remarkable story and a great man, a great individual. And also Josh Bell with films. So stick with us.
I'm Gregory Popovich from Popovich Comedy and Pet Theater, and you are listening to Cats with the Dish.
Welcome back. Sitting in with us now is one of the city's consummate musicians. He has been a mainstay on the Strip and beyond for more than 20 years here in Las Vegas. He and his orchestra debuted at Le Bistro Theatre at the Riviera in the fall of 1990, and since then he has played big band music at various venues throughout the city, including Golden Nugget, Caesar's Palace, Desert Inn, the late great Desert Inn, Bellagio, Sands, the late great Sands, and at Monte Carlo and Zoe Boy's Vintage Vegas Act. To name just a few, he is currently headlining at Ovation at Green Valley Ranch on Thursdays. Second and fourth Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. as the front man for the Lon Bronson Orchestra. Coincidentally, he is, in fact, Lon Bronson. Thanks
Welcome.
For coming in here, Lon. It's great to see you again.
Nice to be here.
I also have to say, it seems like you did perform at a lot of hotels that no longer exist. And let's clarify, do you have nothing to do with these hotels no longer in existence?
No. I believe John wanted to know a list of places I'd played. I just started rattling them off.
Yeah, it was coincidental that the Sands of D.I. were
in that
list.
I was just about to say,
list.
I'm like, whoops, you kind of closed down the places. And we forgot to mention, he's bilingual. He, you know, we do sound
Lon
checks here on the show,
two
and he started. We asked the guests to count to 10 for sound check, as we do, and remarkably, everyone can. But Lon decides to whip off multiple languages that I didn't even know what language he was saying.
Was
which I don't know what this is about me.
Yeah, if you
if
you couldn't tell the language I was speaking, that doesn't bode well for my pronunciation.
As
or
I say.
It doesn't bode well for the fact that I'm as American as you can possibly get.
I do. I say. I barely speak
the English language.
I still am struggling with English myself. So anyway.
Well, welcome.
Andy, nice to be here.
Multi-musical too. You play the trumpet, to great aptitude.
That's my main instrument.
Drums.
Yeah. Some drums
percussion.
On occasion, yeah.
And piano.
Piano.
Yeah, but you're known as a trumpet player.
Yeah, I'm employed pretty strictly here in town as a trumpet player.
But also you are a musical director and all the things. You've actually done a lot of television.
Yes, I have. I've been lucky enough to do a lot of TV.
And we have a person in common that you worked with on a television show, Wayne Newton.
That's correct. As a matter
My
of fact.
My wonderful brother-in-law.
It just re-aired. It was called Drew Carey's Mr. Vegas All-Night Party. Just re-aired on HBO like last week, I think.
Yeah, Drew and Wayne are dear friends. Do a lot of USO stuff together. And that was a really fun special. And just in doing the research for the show, I'm like, oh my gosh, I may have met you because I was actually there.
Well, what was your function on the show?
Oh, then I was producing talk shows, so I was just a family member just hanging out.
And she played the third tambourine.
Yeah, I played the third tambourine behind David Cassidy.
Yeah, David Cassidy. That's
the
second tambourine.
I played Lori Partridge in the David Cassidy
You know, that's actually how I met David, was on that show. Because, you know, I ended up being David's musical director for about 7 years, and we met on that show. So it's odd. There's
a very wide circle
crossing here because we probably passed, you know.
Were you with Cassidy and the Rat Pack? Is that originally?
I was the original musical director for that show at the DI.
At the DI, right.
And we did close. That show did close.
Right.
That casino.
Yeah,
literally.
That's right. Wow. I remember when it opened and when it closed, and Cassidy was doing his Mac the Knife Bobby Darin
thing. So this is a whole new claim to fame for you.
Oh, you closing casinos. Well, I hadn't even, the thought hadn't occurred to me until you guys brought it up.
Oh, leave it to me to bring up something unpleasant. Hey,
but I do want to share that.
Stay away from that. M Resort.
I do want to share the brother-in-law. Oh, yeah, exactly.
To name one.
I wanted to share that story, though, about your brother-in-law.
About Wayne, yes. I don't know this story.
It is pretty cool. We had a lot of stars, as you know, and Drew Carey was the host, and I was lucky enough to be musical director for all the stars that were on the show, including David, and I'm trying to think, the Muffs were on, and a bunch of cool acts at the time. I'm not sure what they're doing now, because I think we taped this in the late 90s. I'm going to say 98, 99.
Yeah.
Any case, Drew, I don't believe he'd ever met
Wayne.
He's
now the host of The Price is Right.
That's correct.
So, and you know, we know what's happened to Drew.
Yeah. But I was going to say Drew was a big fan of your brother-in-law.
Yes.
I don't believe he'd ever met him. This is all pre-USO. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he you know, bounced the idea off of me. He said, what do you think about Wayne and I doing a number together? Let's do Dunkashane. I go, if you can get that on, great, because I can't really see. As a matter of fact, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe I've seen Wayne do that as a duet with anyone ever before. Have you? Do you recall?
Prior to that time, I do not recall. Since that time, a lot of people have asked to sing along with him, but I believe that was the first time. You're absolutely right.
So anyway, I get to go into a dressing room and basically tell your brother-in-law what to sing on his signature song.
Oh, yeah. Now that's a yeah. claim to fame.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Drew goes, well, you know what? I don't want to say, I don't want to tell him what to do on this, so you be the bad guy, and you come in and you decide who sings what verse and who does what. And I'm like, are you kidding? This is like,
oh my God.
Would you send that's me hilarious. In to Frank Sinatra and tell him mm-hmm. what to sing on New York, New York?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, sure enough, you know, I'm a good soldier. I go in there, but here's the thing. Wayne couldn't have been nicer. I mean, absolutely. The two of them were two pussycats just sitting there. They, oh, well, what would you like us to do? Sure, whatever you want. I'm like, well, Wayne, I think you should start. You sing the first verse. Drew will join in on the second verse. We'll sing together here in unison. No harmonies. Not because of Wayne,
oh,
obviously,
yeah.
because of Drew. And so we roadmapped the whole thing out. And honestly,
wow.
I love to tell that story that I actually got to tell Wayne how to sing Dunk
a Shay. Well, I will definitely, I'm going to share that story. That's a great story. I'm going to remind him of that.
How was it that, Lon, that you started here in Las Vegas? You started what became a pretty popular weekly performance at the Riv. There with your
well,
act.
Yeah. As you pointed out, we opened 1990 Le Bistro Lounge at that time.
Mm-hmm.
What had happened is I had gotten to town around 85 and was a little disappointed in the music scene even back then, which in hindsight, I don't know what I was thinking because it was a million times better than what it is now. But I kind of was missing this kind of what I've been famous for doing, this big horn section rock, funk, kind of tower mm-hmm. powery thing. And in I think sometime in 1989, I went down to a joint on Boulder Highway, which is long gone, called Calamity Jane's.
Yeah.
Do you recall that?
I don't ever recall setting foot in there, but you told me about this.
There's
before.
A lot of lore.
Yeah.
There's Vegas lore that all centers on Calamity Jane and her travails and as well
Ooh.
As the club.
Okay.
So in any case,
that sounds interesting.
I went down to see Tower Power and
amazing Tower Power.
Yeah, and wow. I had never seen them live before, and I had been a fan, you know, in their heyday in the 70s. Now this is like I said, like 88, 89, something like that. Anyway, I sat down, watched them at Calamity's, which is an amazing setup, something really we don't have in town anymore, which is a very small independent club where instead of theater seating, they had couches, literally couches.
Oh, I love it. You know, I love the couch feel.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like you're in your living room and here's Tower Power 10 feet in front of you just blowing
wow.
blowing your
you
face
can feel
off.
The power.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Feel the sound.
Oh, literally.
Right.
So anyway, I'm sitting there and after my second or third cocktail, this is a little fuzzy, I literally had an epiphany. I go, I could do this. I could do a Tower Power band with all local homegrown talent here in Vegas. I know I can do this. So long story short is I became friends with some of the guys in Tower. It was another situation where right place, right time. In this time frame, Le Bistro was opening. I had already been working as production manager at the Riviera. So I called up the entertainment director and said, let me do this crazy, wacky idea. I want to have this big horn band. I want to do it in your brand new cool lounge, and I'm going to start Monday night at 1 o'clock in the morning, technically Tuesday morning. And he let me do it.
Who's the ED at the time over there?
That was Sam DeStefano.
Okay.
This is he was a predecessor to Steve Sciarrapo.
Steve Sciarrapo ended up being in that role, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Riviera's got a really, really rich
Steve
history.
About 2 hours ago.
Oh, really?
He's
wow.
doing great, yeah.
Yeah. What's...
So we still stay in touch. But in any case, Sam DeStefano did say yes. He said, you're nuts. This is not going to work. Nobody's going to come out at 1 o'clock in the morning on a Monday night. And as you know, it's right from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
It was jammed with...
Huge.
Well, we had two shows. Everyone had two shows a night back then. So everyone was just getting off their shows, their production shows, their headliner shows at midnight. So 1 o'clock was a slam dunk. It was just jammed with dancers, comics, musicians, show people, headliners when they were visiting. And it just took off from there. I never looked back.
Was there any kind of set... a set list or set schedule of who was going to appear or how they were going to appear for this show? It seems to me retrospectively that it was very loose and like whoever showed up was allowed to come
in. If people showed up,
came
yes, I would either aggressively go after them in person or, you know, on a break, or I would just from the stage.
Mm-hmm.
I would just say, hey, come on, you got to come up here. And we did end up having a couple of guests that weren't really prepared. Like Bill Medley came up and you could tell he really just didn't want to do it. And he, for some reason, said he wanted to do some Motown. And so we got into it, and he didn't know the lyrics to most of the song.
Oh, no.
I mean, he sounded great, and to this day,
yeah, he always sounds great.
I thank him. But you know, that's the thing. The celebrities would want to show up, as they do still,
yeah,
and not necessarily
be part
do,
of the show. Yeah,
you know,
want to be entertained for a change.
You know, he doesn't want to sing that every time he's
right.
sitting in. So he was a good sport. He came up, and we had fun.
Who are some of your favorites from that era who came up?
The list is endless. I think Skunk Baxter. He's the guitarist.
Who is Skunk Baxter?
He's the guitarist, a famous guitarist for Steely Dan.
Oh,
okay, right.
Your brother, like, oh, now we know. Oh, no, Skunk.
I've seen him twice here.
Skunk, okay. Or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Well, and he hasn't been affiliated with Steely Dan for years and years, but one of the great early guests that came up and sat in with us and just blew everybody away. And for those people who, you know, because it was a lot of musicians in the audience who obviously knew who he was, it was like the second coming. We were seeing Skunk Baxter in this lounge at the Riviera, and which is just amazing. Yeah.
This is a period when Steely Dan wasn't doing much live. They weren't doing any touring
no,
at all at that
no,
time.
They weren't doing
it was very rare to
any,
see any of their musicians
any.
Live. Yeah,
and you know what? It wasn't always musicians either. Another fun early guest was Jeremy Piven from
wow.
Entourage.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he actually came to Wayne's show and for a movie and played drums.
I was just going to say,
yeah.
Guess what he did? He sat in on Soul Man. He would only play Soul Man on drums. And because he did. He was friends with Drew. He would come in with Drew periodically. So he sat in with my band 4 or 5 times in the early days. And he was still a star then. I think that was after, what was his hit movie? PCU?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
I believe it was post that, and it was in the midst of one of his many series that didn't do as well as Entourage. But
right.
He, you know, a lot of fun people.
And he's a good drummer.
He was an excellent drummer. I mean, Jackie the Joke Man a million times.
I'm doing something what I don't normally do is read my own work. Fee Waybill, Tubes has been on stage with you.
Fee Waybill actually recorded on our CD that we recorded at the Golden Nugget.
Okay.
And what an amazing guy. I basically, we have an agent that was in common, and he was nice enough to, I was one day just blathering on about how much I love the Tubes. And he said, well, you know, I represent Fee. I go, what?
You can't, I'm just hearing this now.
So I said, any chance you could see what it would, you know, what it would take to get him here to come down guest star with me, as well as record White Punks and Talk to You Later.
Mm.
We recorded
Love
both.
Talk to you later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that little keyboard solo in the section, I rewrote it for the horn sections. It's fun.
Oh, wow.
Haven't released it, though. That's still
well, you have to release it.
That's still in the vault. But White Punks on Dope is on my CD. And long story short is he just went, yeah, that sounds like fun. No problem. Came in, zero rehearsal, no second take. We did it down once. And listen to the CD. It's picture perfect. The guy's an amazing, amazing talent. I'd always loved him in the 70s. But I had never worked with them. And to work with somebody like that, that could just nail it first time.
Yeah.
No attitude. He was the coolest guy you could ever meet.
Dream, huh?
Yeah.
You know, when I talk to other musicians in this city about, you know, kind of the cool and the most respected guys in town, you're in that very, very short list.
Oh, thanks.
Who, in your hands, I mean, when you think about who you'd really like to play with locally, who would you put on, you know, 4 or 5 guys, no matter what the instrument, whether vocalists or whatever, who's your kind of lineup of?
Well, I'll tell you what, guitar, vocal-wise, a gentleman I've been working with a lot lately, Jim Buck.
Oh, he plays for Grimm.
He plays
Michael
for
Grimm?
And
he
also
had
for,
played for Michael Grimm, but now he's in the Terry Fader band.
Right. Okay.
I mean, if you haven't heard him, of course, I'm lucky enough to have him in my band now.
Mm-hmm.
But if you hadn't heard him in any setting, he's just really an amazing talent that I think should be probably better known here in town than he is. Esoterically, he's known amongst musicians and show people. But I mean, he plays guitar like Jimi Hendrix. He sings like Greg Allman. I mean, it's the total package. And he's a drummer. His original instrument was drums. The guitar is his second instrument.
Wow.
You've got to hear him play.
Wow.
That's
he is amazing.
We had Grimm in here, and he brought up.
Yeah,
he brought him up.
And Michael and Jeff.
Yeah,
see?
He mentioned him. Do you think in this instance, I don't know if this strays to other musicians, but when you're in a band that backs a comic or a ventriloquist or that isn't the featured, you don't go there to see or hear the band necessarily.
Right.
Do you compromise some of your reputation musically when you do that?
No, because I think, honestly, those of us who are working here, making a living as musicians, we're all doing that very same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're all what are considered commercial musicians. So we'll play a production show. We'll play a corporate event. we'll have our own projects going on, you know, at the very same time, and somehow, and we teach, and we somehow, right. mm-hmm. you know, blend it all together and make it work. So, no, I think anyone who could say they're making a living in the music field now has absolutely nothing to feel bad about.
Yeah, I actually want to talk to you about that, about the climate here, because you said when you came here about the musical climate, it's really gotten sad. Very few shows have live entertainment. Most of them don't have a big band. The horns are on the synthesizer of some sort.
Exactly.
And so, and then we see shows like, I mean, wonderful show like Peep Show. They had a full orchestra. Then it just went down to the rhythm mm-hmm. section, and now everything's pre-recorded. How do you feel, like, how is that going to change? Is it the unions that are costing too much? Is it that, you know, is it the climate? What is it?
Oh no, it's definitely not the unions. I'm lucky enough to be in one of the last quote unquote big bands, 12 piece, I'd call it a mini big band, for the Rat Pack Is Back show mm-hmm. at mm-hmm. The Rio. But yeah, the list is very small as far as any full or larger orchestra, say like 7 or 8 or larger. It's kind of gone. I mean, I think the blame will always be a financial one. It always comes down to money is the bottom line, making a profit. Now, who in particular to blame for that? I mean, there's a lot of bad guys. The biggest obvious one is just corporate mentality,
mm-hmm.
you know, that if they're involved with the show, that it has to make this amount mm-hmm. of money.
The show itself has to be yeah. a profit where it used to be a loss leader.
Well, exactly. And the biggest example of that, of course, is the lounge scene, which no longer exists anymore
yeah,
for that very reason.
What has happened to that?
Well, they're parallel stories. It basically came down to corporations saying, the lounge is not making any money, or maybe just a tiny little bit amount of money. So we have to cut that, and we'll have to cut the budget for the bands, try and make it profitable. And, you know, it was a slippery slope. Pretty right. soon now the bands suck that are in the lounge because they're not paying any money. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a vicious mm-hmm. circle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then, like, see, we didn't need the lounge to begin with.
Yeah, as Wayne always said, the lounge is like, for him, you know, working in the lounges growing up, that was sort of the training ground to you know, get into the big rooms. And
right.
I mean, he did 6 shows a night, 6 nights a week from the time he was 15. He said that's where you learned your chops. That's where you learned how to deal with hecklers and how to, you know, really hone your skills and be ready for the big room. And now it seems like that training ground is just completely gone.
You know, the lounge, the classic lounge that Wayne was referring to, that is completely gone. It doesn't exist anymore. The closest thing to that would be maybe Matt Goss. That's like a
We've
small lounge show. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but now, which, I mean, you have to pay. It's for
but exactly,
$60.
It's not
that.
Really a lounge show.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference, see? I mean, in my opinion, that's what made Vegas, one of the many things that made Vegas unique, is that you'd get out of your car, get off the bus, get off the plane, whatever, and you'd walk into any casino, and there would be this, like, incredible talent on stage for free that you absolutely could not see in your little home, you know,
right.
podunk hometown.
Well, they've taken the Fontana out of the of Bellagio, for example, Diane Diaz.
That's the last one. That was like the last high profile.
One. Right. And we've had, I mean,
on a strip.
Does it have to, in your view, does it have to be free to be considered a true lounge show? Because there are some paid, there's some paid lounge shows in this city that I think
are
lounge.
Yeah, I mean, lounge, like, and I think Matt Goss is so talented and so wonderful, has a wonderful orchestra. I mean, really putting a lot of musicians to work.
The dancers. Killer.
Yeah, everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. the show is phenomenal. But, you know, it is not a lounge show. It's technically a show in a former lounge.
Right. And my point would be that show should be free. And you should give that away. But you cannot make mm-hmm. the bean counters follow that train of thought, because everyone's sound like, you know, in the old days, the boys or whoever would subsidize these shows. And they just say, we don't care what it costs. People are going to walk out of singing.
Right.
Don Rickles for free mm-hmm. in the lounge,
gonna,
or Wayne.
Pay, yeah, they're going to pay. They're going to pay a lot of money in drinks.
They're going to stick around and gamble.
They're going to
lose everything they have on the tables,
mm-hmm.
and that's how everything. Or eating, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it was all structured, but that's all gone now. It's all every square foot of the casino has to be profitable.
Yeah, the only indicator they looked at was just if the place was making a profit. In general, they didn't line item each.
And you know
each
what?
Area of the hotel.
That's a good point. All they had to do. And even today, all they would have to do is walk through the casino. They don't want to walk through the casino at night when a show's going on. They just want to look at the numbers.
Yeah.
Well, we can see that we lost money on the drinks last night, so let's get rid of this and let's open up an ultra lounge, mm-hmm. which is profitable.
And it's even
way profitable.
Even the you know, the showrooms, the way that they're so different, that it's like basically a Ticketmaster type of a situation. And I remember, I mean, not even, it's not like I'm 150 years old, but I remember when I was younger, you know, like two or three, and I used to come to Vegas. That I mean, you would tip the maitre d' and you would get a better seat. I mean, it wasn't.
Right.
It was just such a better feel, and people dressed up, and people. I mean, I do think I agree with you 100% that I think a lot of the corporate has taken away a lot of the charm.
And I couldn't agree with you more on that. I think they've destroyed that whole Vegas vibe that you could only get in Vegas. Mm-hmm. And now you could pretty much get more of that old Vegas vibe elsewhere at Indian casinos. They have,
yes.
They're closer to, you know, being able
your
to
hometown,
tip the maitre d' and getting a...
They're beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, Mohegan Sun in Connecticut is amazing.
Yeah, wow. And people dress up. When they go to shows there, they dress up. It's a night out. It's a nice night out.
I just hope we haven't missed the boat, because people, obviously, we had another record set, I think, last month, if I'm not mistaken, of tourists coming to town.
Yeah,
so obviously people are still coming back. I'm just afraid at some point somebody might go, wait a minute, we're really not getting a whole lot for our money here.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you know, it'll be too late. Why not just go back a little bit to those policies that we're talking about? Well, I mean, it wouldn't hurt. If one casino, I guarantee you, if one casino had the balls to stand up and do that, everyone else would follow suit.
It would take an entire... Yeah. Well,
but
at this point, it would take Caesars Entertainment
to do
it. Well, you know?
Unfortunately, yeah. rarely...
It would take an MGM
people run. That own one casino.
Yeah, it would
like,
have to be somebody like the Trop. Or,
yeah, like Alex Imanidze at the Trop.
That's the one I think of.
Well, they had their own at the Treasure Island. Right, like, you know, we have to be something.
They
or
had
Steve
their own.
Lynn.
They had their own union issues over there at the Trop that I've written about too. So that's a little iffy. I want to get.
It's a dream. I know.
I know. They tried to do it over there.
What's my dream?
They did try to do it over there.
I'm gonna get on the Lon Bronson dream. I'm right behind you.
There are some pockets. I mean, your show. There's Frankie Moreno is doing this thing at Rush Lounge and just wrapped it up. That's a traditional lounge show with horns.
You know, Zoe Bowie. You know, has done efforts in their vintage Vegas show with the big bands.
I'm part of that show.
Yeah.
So people, you know, people are trying it, and I just would love for it to be more mainstream, more successful. So I'm 100% behind you.
Yeah,
right.
I firmly agree.
And we're hoping the Zoe Bowie thing actually finds a home soon.
What are you hearing about that?
Well, I actually did Chris's show a couple of days ago.
Yeah. What's
happening? He's hinting hard that he's got someplace on the street.
I'd like to know where that
is.
It's got to be the Riv. It's got to be. It's got to be maybe something on in the Caesars family for him to do what he wants to do.
I don't know, because
I have a theory.
Okay,
I got a theory too. What's
your
theory?
But I'm not going to say it. Well, I guess I could say it. No, I think maybe a Trop thing. Don't you?
It would work at the Trop. It would work at the Trop.
I don't know.
There's a big old room that's going to need somebody to be in there.
Exactly.
He's been, and he was at the Santa Fe stuff a lot when they were doing their thing in there. Chris was.
Yeah. Right.
Checking out the scene. And I also know that a certain producer in town has been watching him pretty closely.
Well, if I had to guess, and it would be a complete guess, I'd say, wouldn't it be cool if it was the Riv? Because then it would all come
full circle to where
it
you started. That's,
and
that's
and
true.
That's what that lounge was known for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and its location, you know, the real estate, can't be touched because it's right there in the center of the gaming, just you know, fulfilling all the things we were just describing.
Well, it would do nothing but help the Riviera too.
Yes,
having that kind of show in there. I want to get into the here and now, Lon, before we wrap it up here. End of the day. I have a song here that you've handed to me that has to do with Tower of Power and your affiliation with them, and they're going to be joining you on September 15th at Ovation.
Yes.
What's the story? The quick up and down.
Well, the famed co-leader of Tower of Power, baritone saxophonist extraordinaire Doc Funky Doc.
Funky Doc.
Funky
Kupka,
Doc.
The Funky
Doc. Stephen Funky Doc.
He's a good friend of mine, and we've been putting together this project, a recording, for over, it's going on 2 years now.
Wow.
And it's called Doc Goes Vegas. And it's all original stuff mostly original stuff that he and I wrote, and it's with the help of another friend of mine, Joe Escriba, and it's going to be recorded in part on the 15th. When Tower Power, most of Tower Power joins us on stage at Ovation. And they've done this a few times in the past, once at the M, a couple times at Ovation. I actually got one of the concerts of the year choices for the RJ. last year. I mean, because it is pretty amazing. You're seeing my whole band plus most of theirs. So you're there. I think there was 21 people on stage at one point.
Yeah, and you're not going to see that at the
Yeah.
places.
So in any case, it not only is that cool on its own that we have Tower of Power out there ovation with us on the 15th of September, but we're going to record, and one of the songs that we're going to record that night is going to be At the End of the Day, which is a cool thing that Doc and I put together.
At the End of the Day, your favorite saying.
Well, yeah, it actually did. It emanated from a phone conversation where I was ranting about how this phrase has become so overused in our lexicon. It's just ridiculous. Everyone is starting a phrase or a sentence with, but at the end of the day, and it just, for some reason, it's just been bugging me and bugging me. So about a year ago, I got on the phone with Doc, and I'm going off, and Doc just, up to silence on the other, I'm going, what the hell's going on? He goes, we're going to write a song called At the End of the Day. And there's the product.
I love it. I can't wait to hear it. Well, sir, at the end of the day,
At the end of the day, we're very excited that you came on the show.
I'm not
going
to be able to say this now without thinking
and
of you.
And at the end of the day, we really hope that you'll come back again
We'll
another
do this
time.
Another day.
Yeah, on another day.
I would love
at
to
the
come
end
back.
Of that other day.
We'll do it.
And I'll dress this time.
Oh,
that'll be motive for you to come back.
Yes,
Lon Bronson Orchestra, Las Vegas Institution for 20 years. Ovation at Green Valley Ranch on the second and fourth Thursdays.
Of each month.
From 9 to 11 p.m. Check them out, guys, only if you want to have a great time, because it is one of the best scenes in the city.
And thanks. It's free.
And it is.
And it's free.
And as we say, if it's free, it's me. So thanks, Lon, for coming on down.
Thank you, guys.
Mariana Stoffel did it that night. I couldn't believe it. Her poems and everything. What have you got to say to that?
Well, I already knew.
What do you mean you knew?
Well, I sort of guessed.
That's Anne Hathaway and Jim Sturgis as friends/lovers Emma and Dexter in the romantic drama One Day. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's opening in theaters this week. Based on the popular novel by David Nichols, One Day follows the relationship of Dexter and Emma checking in each July 15th for about 20 years. While that may translate into an emotional epic on the page, as a movie it plays more like a highlights reel of a longer story. Hathaway has a spotty British accent and not a whole lot of chemistry with Sturgis, and the supporting characters come and go without making much of an impression. On top of all that, the movie ends up with a maudlin, sentimental twist that sours everything that came before and makes it hard to care about the characters that you've spent this much time with. I give One Day 2 stars out of 5. Also opening this week are two remakes of popular movies from the 1980s, including a new version of Conan the Barbarian, as well as Fright Night, about a teenager who thinks his neighbor might be a vampire.
Say I wanted to kill a vampire.
Yeah, sorry, go on.
How would I go about doing that?
You want to know how to kill a vampire? Seriously?
Yeah, kill a vampire.
Fright Night takes an affectionate, if sloppy, original and adds a bunch of grim violence and empty flashiness to it without much effect. It succeeds neither as a horror film nor as a campy tribute to the B-movies of the past. Conan, with Jason Momoa replacing Arnold Schwarzenegger as the title character, is loud and incoherent and brutal and it never lets up, but that's not a compliment. With barely any sort of plot to bridge the stabbings and beatings, Conan is a punishing, unpleasant experience. I give both movies 2 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and online at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Welcome back. Sitting with us now is one of Las Vegas' more remarkable comeback stories. For 20 years, he was one of the busiest lounge performers in this city. Then he fell ill to stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which took him out of action for 2 years and nearly cost him his life. But he's back now on stage at M Resort's Ravello Lounge. He's also released a new CD titled The Crooner. Here to talk about his return to prominence is Mark O'Toole. Thanks for coming on down, Mark.
Hi, John. How you doing? Thank you.
As they say in sports, you're kind of playing injured today.
I'm getting over a lot of laryngitis right now, so yeah. I sound like Brenda Vaccaro. Yeah.
who is a, she's our next guest. Oddly enough,
I'm so sorry.
Brenda's in the green room. Wait, we don't have a green room either. Brenda Vaccaro and her, yeah, she had quite an ad campaign in the old days, didn't she?
Oh God.
There is something to that, I guess, right? The Vegas, what do they call it, Vegas voice?
It's called Vegas throat.
Yeah.
Literally, I was supposed to perform last week. Do I sound sexy? I was.
I'll say in a purely platonic way. You do.
Yes. Okay, yeah. Thank you. And get your hand off my lap. So as you say that. So anyway, yeah, I was going on Friday night and. Literally 2 minutes before I went on to do a show, my voice just went. And I was like, are you kidding me? So I've been out of work for a week and just recuperating. They gave me a shot in my butt and then I'm on prednisone. So actually, I'm starting not only to sound like Brenda Vaccaro, but B. Arthur at the same time. So, yeah.
The late, great B. Arthur.
Yeah, right.
Prednisone is not, it's a strong.
It's knocking me for a loop.
Yeah, that stuff is very, very powerful. I know that. So you must be.
I'm shaving 3 times a day.
You can pick up a Bic endorsement contract while you're going through this whole thing. So, Mark, I got to tell you, the first time I saw you perform for all of the work you've done in Las Vegas was The Bootlegger.
Right,
and
I know.
It was your comeback kind of event, right?
Or, Sally Struthers was with me.
Sally Struthers, your friend.
And then the next night, I believe, it was at the M Resort.
Mm-hmm.
And because I knew Dennis Bono and his wife Lorraine, mm-hmm. and I said, okay, we'll come down and we'll do a little thing there. And
the proprietors of The Bootlegger.
Yeah,
yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I never met them before. They're very nice. So then I went to the M, and they gave me the opportunity to perform. And they said, you know, there's no way that one person is going to fill this room. And I said, give me the opportunity. I've been doing this a long time. And then the next thing you know, it was just magical. So I've been there for a year and 3-4 months now.
Right. It's worked out very well for you over there. So it's kind of a tucked away place, but it's beautiful.
Beautiful lounge. Yeah. Probably one of the most beautiful. I've played every lounge in this town. And I'd say probably top 3 lounges in town.
It's almost, it's like a mix almost between it's a small showroom and a large lounge. It has that feel. I mean, it seats about, does it seat 400 people or
something? About 350, 400. And the thing is, it has the tiers with the booths, and kind of like the old Vegas feel, but I loved it. It's just, it's very intimate and it's very classy, and they treated me very well. So.
Yeah, the night when I went to see your CD release party, you looked around that room. I even wrote about this. You know, one time I looked over and there's Clinton Holmes and buddies, and they're all, and then the Bonos were there. And then I turned around. Mary Wilson from the Supremes is like hanging out in the aisle. I'm like, this is a very, very traditional vintage Vegas kind of an experience.
I was very fortunate when I was releasing this album for the CD release party. A lot of people were involved, Carrot Top and Terry Fader.
In that video.
Mm-hmm. And everybody got involved with the montage, and Frank Shinter and Rita Rudner, and just wonderful people said, you know, we're going to help
Rick
you out here.
Fanyo from Jersey Boys did a nice segment, sang in it.
I just didn't, my second time was, I did Dennis Bono's show last year. He was appearing with me, and then I did it this week, and he was on with me again. So I see Rick now all the time. He's a great guy. What a wonderful guy.
Hey,
so.
He's kind of a throwback.
Really sweet guy.
Very traditionally.
Very laid back.
Yeah, very good. That was a hodgepodge clip. I mean, in one moment, like you say, we had Rick and then Carrot Top and the Shinta, and then Kelly dressed as Wayne Newton. It was just like.
I was strangely turned on by her dressed as Wayne Newton, by the way.
Yeah, that's
very strange.
It's very conflicting.
Yeah. And then Sally Struthers, of course, did the final. Mm-hmm. Emotional.
Yeah, she's very interested. Now, tell me about that. I did because I met her that night over at the Bootlegger. How did that relationship
begin? Well, when I moved from Boston, I moved to Los Angeles, and there was a guy named Jay Thomas. He was on Murphy Brown and Cheers. He played Eddie the Becker on Cheers.
Right.
He had his own show at Power 106, and he said to me, "Hey, I really like you. I hear you could do character voices." So I played his mother for 2 years. I got syndicated in radio by working with Jay. So I moved to L.A.
Okay. His mother probably sounded like B. Arthur, fortunately enough.
No, it was kind of a weird thing. I started doing character voices in high school as a joke. And then Jay heard me and he said, come on to L.A. And I started writing his show with him. And now he's on Sirius Radio and he's doing great for himself.
I mean, if you do character voices, did you ever think that you might be able to establish a career in that field?
No, like, I always wanted to sing.
Really?
I always wanted to sing. So what happened was is I would work for him during in the morning, and then at nighttime I would go to the open mic nights. Mm. And me and a girl named Beth Hart and I became very good friends, and we would just travel all through L.A., the Comedy Store, the Laugh Factory, the Rose Tattoo, all these different places to just to be seen. And then in 1993, Beth Hart, my dear friend, won Star Search, and she won all the episodes, and she won, she got a great deal, and she had a big, big hit, and she said to me, Mark, you know, you need to try out for Star Search. And I'm like, what? She's like, yeah. I said, and she says, they pick one out of 80,000 people. So sure enough, I tried out in 1994. I moved to Las Vegas and I started doing a solo act on the strip.
Right.
And the next thing I know, I got a phone call from Star Search. And
the American Idol of its day.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
I remember but Star Search.
Star Search was the best. You know, it really was. It set a precedent. And, I flew down to Orlando, Florida, and I beat the champ and became the male
vocalist. Who did you knock off?
I don't know his name. Mm-hmm. He didn't become anything.
It wasn't an established star now.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then it just opened up so many doors for me in Vegas. I mean, I was here for about 6 months, and the next thing I knew, appearing on Star Search opened every major door for me. I mean, every casino called me, John, and they said, hey, we want to get you in here. And that's for the last 20 years I performed in Vegas.
Where was your first entry point into the city? Which venue?
Oh, my gosh. I played places like the Aladdin and the Stardust and the Riv and all the MGM properties, Harrah's, the Luxor. I mean, everywhere.
Wow.
So, I mean, it really opened up a lot of doors. And usually you have to sleep with a lot of people to get that kind of recognition, but I didn't have to, you know what I mean? I was just like, I was on national television. So there it was, you know, so I was very fortunate.
I know you've been in enough places. It's what we call the implosion Hall of Fame. A lot of these places aren't even in existence anymore. And a lot of venues have gone
it's
away
really
over time. And we've talked about this before, how the lounges in this city.
My own feelings on this. Mm-hmm. I have very strong feelings about how this town has changed and not for the better. I think that this town needs to start offering live entertainment again. Mm-hmm. And they wonder why, you know, there's great shows here, don't get me wrong, but to bring a family of five to see a show that costs you thousands of dollars, you blow your vacation money all in one night. You could literally, as you know, go into any nightclub or any lounge, see great live entertainment, and now it's gone. I mean, like probably 80% of all of the live entertainment is gone now.
Yeah, if you know this culture as well as anybody, if you were sitting across from an entertainment director for one of the major resort chains and you know, were to make your most compelling argument for that to happen, what would you start with? Because often they are all about the bottom line. How do I make money off Mark O'Toole playing my lounge? What is your answer to that?
Well, John, you know what? The average band didn't make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I could tell you that the average band, every band made about $1,000 a night for a 5 and 6 piece band. So you're talking about a low revenue. I mean, to get people to come in, not everybody wants to gamble 24/7. They want to come in and be entertained. Mm-hmm. And so, listen, I mean, they can go see a show, they can go see a Cirque show, which is great, they can go see shows, but it's costly. My idea, if I had Steve Wynn in the room, I'd say, do you remember what it was like? How much excitement? And you could walk into a casino and you could hear that music playing, you could go over and take a break, and the lounge was always full. And, you know, you have to give something back to these people that are coming to Las Vegas. And I really believe that when I got sick, for the 2 years that I got sick in 2007 with my cancer, it's when all of the casinos dropped their entertainment.
That does directly coincide with about that period of time.
And it did. It did.
About 4 years ago.
And it was kind of like, during that time, I had to reinvent myself. But I look at all the MGM properties, who I have a great deal of respect for, because I played there. For all of their properties, they call themselves the city of entertainment. There's no entertainment and not one of those lounges now. You know, you've got to start offering people live entertainment. I mean, people thrive on that. So if I was to sit down with somebody from, like you say, Steve Wynn or somebody like that, bring it back, because you know what? I think people really long for that. And that's why I think I'm doing well now.
It's more playing on their emotional and visceral connection to it than rather saying, you know, here's a set of numbers and this is how you can make it work financially. You're playing on the nostalgia and how to keep that form of entertainment going because it is so singularly affiliated with Las Vegas, right?
I do. Yeah. This town was built on entertainment. Mm-hmm. It really was, and great food and
right.
You know, and you know the way it used to be here. So
right. It's entertainment changed. Capital of the world for a reason, and people often forget that. You're listening to Cats with the Dish. This is John Katzlamitis, without my dear co-host, Tricia McCrone, who's off in Montana attending to Wayne Newton stuff. Mark O'Toole is with me right now. He has just released a CD, The Crooner, and he's at M Resort's Ravello Lounge. Which nights at Ravello?
Wednesday afternoon, 2:30 to 5:30. Actually, they just changed my time. I'm sorry. 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock on Wednesday afternoons, and Saturday nights from 6:30 to 8:30.
Right. You touched on, and I want to ask you about your illness and the way you were able to fight through that, not only just to survive it, but then to return to your chosen profession. Incredible. Take me through, if you could, when you first were diagnosed and what that was like.
My story is of hope and inspiration, and I hope when people hear this that they realize that there is hope, and there is no, the doctors are not gods, because I got off stage one night. I was playing at the Paris Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
I was the house band there for 3 years, and I had took a shower when I got home, and I felt a little lump under my chin. Mm. And within literally a week, I was misdiagnosed. They said I had a cold, and they put me on penicillin. Well, after about 100 tumors showed up in my face, in my body, pretty much started disfiguring my face. I had the size of, I'd say, a fist coming through my lower throat, all within 2 weeks. And at that time, I went to the doctors, and my doctor said, this is how he told me I had cancer. He said, how do you feel about toupees? And I was like, what? And he said, yep.
Really?
He said, you are at stage 4. And I went to the Nevada Cancer Institute, where a team of 10 doctors told me to pack my bags. I had about 4 to 6 weeks left to live.
How do you feel about toupees? What did you say to that?
I said, screw that. I said, I have life. I have dogs I have to take care of. I have
my
the
dog
will to
really
live.
Hate toupees.
Yeah. No. But I just said, this is not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So with the love of my mom, who had to move in with me, she flew when she's 87 years old, took care of me.
Man.
My friends, my family members, everybody rallied by my side. And I never said the C word. I never gave
really?
It energy. No, I never said it because I felt that gave it energy. I just ate. I did what they told me to do. And, you know, I just had the will to live. And I knew when I was going through my chemotherapy, when I would go to these, when sit down with all these people who were inflicted with cancer, I knew who was going to live and who was going to die, because I could see it in their face that they just didn't have the will to live.
Didn't have the fight or given up the fight.
They did
you can
not
see
have
it.
The fight. Uh-huh. They did not. And I just refused to give in, because I just had so much left to give, and I felt that God had a plan for me.
Where were you physically, actually living at the time? Were you in Las Vegas?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes,
and you were here the whole time?
Oh, yeah, the whole time.
Amazing. So was there ever a moment where you thought that you really might not pull through?
There was only one night. One night I got up, and I lost about 40 pounds, and I got up in the middle of the night, and I looked in the mirror, and I didn't recognize who I was, and it was shocking. I looked at my face. I had chemo face, that round, gray face.
Gray.
I was completely bald, mm-hmm. And the Riviera hired me. And they said it was, and I believe that kept me alive. I believe that singing kept me alive during my illness. I would get up, I'd dress in a full suit, and I'd wear a baseball cap, and I would sing every weekend at the Riviera. As sick as I was, whether I had to hold on to a chair or a microphone stand, I got up, and all the people who remembered me through the years, they would come and support me every week.
Which venue was it over there?
It was just outside. Actually, they shut down that lounge as well.
Okay,
but
right.
What they did was they had a little stage set up for me. And for 2 years, I performed there, and I had people support the love, and just they said, you know, you're going to do this, and I did it.
Was Shripa the entertainment?
Steve Shripa was not. He left because he was doing.
It was about the time Sopranos.
He was
started.
The Sopranos.
Okay, but they
were wonderful. They supported
me. That's incredible.
Yeah, and so I made a pact with God. I'm not a holy roller by any means, but I said if I was to survive this, and knock on wood that I did, that I would pay it forward any chance I could. So I try to help as many people, and whether help them with a travel someplace throughout the country and do a benefit or do something here, or whether it's for AIDS or diabetes or cancer, Make-A-Wish Foundation, which we just donated to. I just swore to God that I would always help out now.
Right. And that's got to be very fulfilling for you.
It makes me feel so good.
I mean, exactly. It's a very selfless thing. Especially for entertainers in Las Vegas, I think get a bad rap for not doing enough. They get a bad rap as a reputation for a city that doesn't do enough. But I know a lot of entertainers who do a lot.
I think a lot of entertainers, like Frank Marino.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Here's somebody who doesn't. I think if you're going to do something from the heart, you shouldn't be getting on a bullhorn and telling people, listen, if you're going to do it, do it.
Just he's a Make-A-Wish Foundation guy too.
That's exactly that's right. And the thing is, if you're going to do something, do it. Why do you need recognition to do something? Mm-hmm. Just do it.
Yeah, you don't need a parade every time out, right? Let's talk about the CD that you've just released, The Crooner. You look quite dashing on the cover here, Mark. I got to tell you, you look very healthy in the tux.
I'm back in remission. I'm very healthy, thank God.
Yes.
This CD was a huge collaboration. My friend Paul Buller and his wife Janice. Mm-hmm. He's now my manager.
Yep.
We were so blessed. We flew in a gentleman by the name of Keith Olson. Mm-hmm. He's a 6-time Grammy winner, and Keith has produced albums for Eddie Money, Whitesnake, Rick Springfield, REO Speedwagon, Starship, Fleetwood Mac, Stevie Nicks. He came and saw me and he said, listen, I think we can make a great album. And sure enough, we sat down, we went to the Palm Studios. It took a week out of my life. And then Jason Sheff, the lead singer from Chicago, hopped in. Mm-hmm. He hopped on board. And he wrote a song called One Last Time, and he's singing on the album as well. And it's a great album. I'm so proud of it. It has 13 tracks on it, and it's on iTunes right now. It's on
Amazon.com. You can find it there.
Mm-hmm. And if people are interested in checking it out, they can go to markotoolmusic.com.
You've got a wink and a smile on here.
Yeah, we did.
Save the Last Dance for me.
We did a lot of remakes, but the one song, One Last Time, that Jason wrote is remarkable, and hopefully you get to play a little bit.
Yeah, we'll sample it.
Sure, yeah.
Or we have sampled it, I guess, at this point.
And there's, we did, okay, sorry. And Alex Ligertwood, he's the lead singer formerly of Jeff Beck and Santana, he did all the background vocals for it, so very blessed to have it. It's a great CD. We're getting great responses we're starting to play it now throughout the country, and we're getting some great responses right
now. So from here, you've got this out, you've achieved that, you're back in good form.
Yes.
The laryngitis notwithstanding.
Not today, mind you.
This is atypical. This happens to all the singers in Las Vegas.
It does.
What are you going to build toward now? I mean,
big time. We have a great PR team, so I'll be getting on the road pretty soon, touring and really promoting this and doing a lot of television shows and a lot of radio shows and get this out to as many people as possible.
And your gig at the M is sort of open ended, right? I mean, it's an
extended they've been very good. They like I said, they've been wonderful to me. So, they've been good. They said, hey, just stay with us as long as you can. So I said, absolutely.
That's true in many ways, isn't it? Stay with us as long as you can.
Right.
All right, Mark. Well, we gotta close the curtain on this lounge act. The Crooner is the CD name. M Resorts Ravella Lounge is the venue. Mark O'Toole is the entertainer. We'll do this again. And
thank you so much, by the way, for having me.
Oh, no problem. It's a pleasure to see you.
I respect you immensely. Thank you.
Likewise. And just thank you for coming down.
Las Vegas.